This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to Live and Learn on the Bigger Picture. I'm Chua Entek. In March 2008, social unrest in Tibet erupted in a series of violent protests. Sonam Wangdu has a film out called Ban Expression about his homeland. We talked to him about the legacy of that incident and the welfare of Tibetan under Chinese rule. Welcome, Sonam.
Thank you. Yes.
Just to provide some context, what happened in March 2008 in the days leading up to the riots?
March 2008, the uprising was what you call marked the largest series of protests, you know, against the Chinese rule in Tibet since 1959. Since 1959, there has been so many protests. Like in 1987, we have the martial law in Tibet, but since then, the 2008 March has been one of the most intense and the strongest uprising since 1959. And a lot of Tibetans from every walks of life, nomads, farmers, they rose up against the Chinese repressive rules. So the Chinese, the reason why the protest against the Chinese is, you know, because of the suppressive policies they have on the Tibetan people for long, and that's how the March protests came in about 2008. And about hundreds of Tibetans were killed, and many thousands were arrested, and many are still missing. And that's how the 2008 March uprising came. Yeah.
The Chinese government accused the Dalai Lama of orchestrating the riots. What is the source of Tibetans' discontent?
The Chinese, they have been blaming His Holiness. They have been calling him the splitist, the monks in a devil's robe. I mean, whatever any protests or any incident happens in Tibet, you know, the Chinese, they always link this the incident to Dalai Lama, and they accuse him. They accuse him of instigating any kind of violence or protest. So, but the reality is, you know, the Tibetans living, especially the Tibetans, the younger generations, the Tibetans living in the Chinese rule, who are brought up in the Chinese education system, they kind of feel the suffocation. And even the Chinese, they claim that there have been so much progress and development in the China, in the Tibetan region, but as more and more Tibetans are unemployed, jobless, so eventually the younger generations, you know, they realize that, you know, and the 2008 kind of marked a kind of a vibrant resurgence, you can call, in terms of literature or anything, you know.
I want to talk about the methods of these young Tibetans. In the past 3 years alone, more than 100 Tibetans have burned themselves to death in protest of the Chinese rule. This is according to the International Campaign for Tibet and among other other sources. Many of them are monks and nuns. How effective are acts of self-immolation?
There has been a lot of debate going on the efficacy, or some call it it's against the Buddhist religion or Buddhist principles, you know. But then the reality is, you know, that Tibetans are, you know, they are kind of they're trying their best, you know, to show the world and bring the attention of the world to the sufferings of Tibetans going on in Tibet for so many years, you know. And the self-immolation, if you look at the self-immolation thing, you know, that people burn themselves, you know, they don't participate in the act of violence upon some other individuals. They just bring suffering, or they burn themselves onto themselves, you know, and they try to, and many of the self-immolators, they wish, you know, they call for the freedom of freedom inside Tibet, and they want His Holiness to come back, to return to Tibet. So the self-immolation has been, as you said, you know, that since 2009, there has been 130 self-immolations happening inside Tibet. And the youngest self-immolation is 15 years old. It's a desperate call, you know, to bring the attention of the people of the world to the Tibetan cause.
But is that the aim itself, to call for attention? Are those the twin goals of the protests?
Yeah, many of the self-removers, the wishes are the return of His Holiness the Dalai Lama to Tibet. I think it has been long due of the Tibetan, and many of the Tibetans living inside Tibet. One of their main aspirations or dreams is to see their leader, their spiritual leader, His Holiness the Dalai Lama, inside Tibet before they pass. You know, so it's a huge dream or aspirations what the Tibetans inside in Tibet they live for. You know, and it's been 50 years, more than 50 years since the failed uprising against the Chinese in 1959. So in some ways, I believe that, you know, that people are kind of losing a little hope, you know. So with the self-immolation, they think that with this method, they think that it might bring some attention from the world, international community, to the Tibetan plight, you know.
What is the Dalai Lama's position on self-immolation?
Dalai Lama, he has said it very clear that, you know, he's against the self-immolation, you know. It goes against the very core of Buddhist principles, you know, to take someone's life, you know. But then he also has said that, you know, he understands and he understands the intention and the aspiration of what these self-immolators they go through, you know, and they know the intention and he know the intentions, you know. So I think he's in a very kind of he also said that, you know, I can't say against them, but he can't also support the self-immolation. So he said very clear that, you know, as a Tibetan, you know, he empathized with the Tibetan self-immolators, but speaking on the religious term, you know, it goes against the Buddhist core principles, you know.
You call the Dalai Lama His Holiness, and he is the spiritual leader of the Tibetan people. For an outsider looking in, could you give us a sense of what does the Dalai Lama mean to ordinary Tibetans, and why is he seen in such an exalted light?
Dalai Lama, looking back in our Tibetan history, you know, Dalai Lama is one of the central and the most pivotal figure in our Tibetan as a nation, you know. Before the Chinese invasion in 1959, Dalai Lama has been the spiritual and the temporal leader of Tibetans, you know. So he had the Dalai Lama, I mean, he is the 14th Dalai Lama, and Dalai Lama, his previous reincarnations, you know, they have been the spiritual and the temporal leader of Tibet as well. So Dalai Lama for Tibetan is not just a religious figure, but also a politically light, one may say, or someone, maybe a guidance. So he is everything to us, you know, for every Tibetan, you know.
Tibet fell into the People's Republic of China in 1951. Could you contrast for us how things changed after that, or how it was before 1951?
Before 1959, there has been, I mean, yeah, Tibet. Well, Tibet is a very backward nation, you know, very cut off from the rest of the world, you know. As one can say, Tibet never participated in the UN. UN meetings or functions. Tibet has a kind of policy that, you know, that we should, if we stay aloof, then nobody can touch us, you know. So Tibetans have been living aloof and very isolated from the rest of the world, with less knowledge and with less idea about what's happening around the globe, you know. So Tibet basically was a very backward nation, but spiritually it's a very rich country with its long history of traditions and culturally traditionally. Yes, but before the Chinese occupation, yeah, Tibet was a backward country, but an independent nation.
I'm speaking today to Tibetan filmmaker Sonam Wangdu. We'll find out more about his film Ban Expression after the break. BFM 89.9.
This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Good afternoon and welcome to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture. I'm Chua Eun-taek. If you have just joined us, Sonam Wangdeu, filmmaker from Tibet, is joining us on the line. A film, Ban Expression, which will be screened at this weekend's Freedom Film Festival in PJ Live Arts. Sonam, tell us about your film and what you tried to achieve with it.
Ban Expression in Tibet, basically the name itself, you know, kind of gives you the clue that the expressions, you know, in Tibet, Tibet is close to the outside world, you know, and basic human rights like freedom of speech, expressions are brutally suppressed by the Chinese government, you know. And the film kind of explores the creative expressions of the Tibetan writers, the singers and artists, you know. As I mentioned to you earlier, in the 2008, there was a huge uprising, and which led to the resurgence of the vibrant resurgence in the field of literature, songs, you can say. So basically the film explores on the Chinese brutally suppression of the Tibetan people's creative expressions, be it songs, literature.
I was wondering, why did you choose film as a medium to advocate freedom of expression?
Film is all I know, I guess. Maybe you can say that some people are painters, some are writers, but I, for some reason, I have this affinity towards films, you know. So, and since it's a visual medium, you know, it kind of affects the, it kind of have a more effect on the general masses. So I think a film is a perfect tool or medium to spread the awareness and the message across the people. Yes, that's the reason why.
So your documentary is also part of a larger campaign called Ban Expression, Support Free Speech in Tibet. Tell us about that campaign and how it's doing.
We started this campaign last year on the World Human Rights Day, which coincides with the 10th of December. 10th of December basically was the day when the Nobel Peace Prize was awarded to His Holiness the 14th Dalai Lama. So last year, my office, which is called Voice of Tibet, a radio news service, and in collaboration with the Tibetan Center for Human Rights and Development, which is called TCHRD, we started this campaign called the Ban Expression, Freedom of Speech in Tibet. And we invited one of the most famous rock band of India to our place, which is Dharamsala, North India. And we held a concert. And the concert was a part of our campaign. And from last year, we kick-started our campaign, the Ban Expression.
Since the 2008 protests, has the Chinese government rethink its policy in Tibet?
Since 2008, you know, I mean, the policies are turning into more aggressive, you know. The Xi Jinping government is turning more aggressive, you know. Recently, there was an article that, you know, that China employs around 200 million internet policing, you know. And as you may know, that many of the messaging apps like WeChat, they are used by China to, you know, to spy or to get information about the users and everything. And in Tibet, you know, and in Tibet, it's a very common thing that the phones are tapped, the messaging, and each and every phone user, they have to register their names with their photographs. So basically, the censorship and the crackdown has been intensified since 2008.
200 million
internet internet police.
But other than that, the Chinese government has tried to integrate the poorer region of Tibet, as well as the far west like Xinjiang, with massive infrastructure spending. Is this a working policy?
Oh yes, absolutely. You know, in this film, you know, we talk about the writers, you know, and the singers, and one of the Tibetan writers, his name is called Theorang Dashi Rabdeng. Most of the writers in Tibet, they use a pen name, you know, like to evade the censorship, you know. So he wrote a very powerful article called "Sweet Lies." Sweet Lies. basically the Chinese the Chinese government they have been building a lot of infrastructure, as you mentioned, like they have been building shopping malls, they have been building a lot of the railways and everything. And in his article, he kind of smashes the campaign by the Chinese government, and he says that these are sweet lies, you know. And even the Chinese, they claim that with the new railways and infrastructure, more tourists will come to Tibet, you know. And he also wrote an article, an essay called "They Treat Us Like Animals," you know. What he says is there are a lot of tourists from mainland China, they come to Tibet to visit, and without having any knowledge about Tibetan history, culture, tradition, and he writes that these Chinese tourists with their cameras, and they click pictures of the Tibetan people as if they are kind of some kind of exotic animals. So he wrote a very powerful essay called "They Treat Us Like Animals." So basically, as you mentioned, you know, they have been going a massive infrastructure progress and development, but then. But many of the Tibetans feel that these help only Chinese, because most of the workers are migrant Chinese, and the project managers or the incentive are being enjoyed by the Chinese, and the Tibetans, they don't get job.
There is also a conventional Chinese view in Beijing that the problem in Tibet would end with the death of the Dalai Lama. What are your thoughts on this?
I think Tibet issue is not one person issue, as His Holiness, he always mentions, you know, wherever he goes, that Tibet issue is not an issue of Dalai Lama. So Tibet issue is an issue of 6 million Tibetans. It's an issue of a nation, you know. I think if we take into consideration that without the picture of Dalai Lama, obviously there will be a huge setback. But the Tibet issue will go on and on, you know. And since it's an issue of a Tibetan as a nation, as an independent nation with a proud history and tradition and culture, unique. So I personally think that it will throw us out of gear, but we will come on track.
What role is the Tibetan exile government playing right now?
Tibetan government in exile plays a very key role, you know. I mean, Tibetan government in exile not only helps or resettle the Tibetans living in exile, but it also plays a very key role in bridging a relation with the Tibetans living inside Tibet and the Tibetans living outside Tibet in exile, like us in India. So yeah, obviously, the Tibetan government in exile plays a very key role.
I want to ask this final question for you. What do you think is the best solution for Tibet between Tibetan independence and sovereignty under Chinese rule, which I understand is the Dalai Lama's preferred position? What is your solution?
I think it's a very difficult question to answer. You know, that lately there has been Dalai Lama, he stands in the middle way approach. And now in our Tibetan community in exile, certain section of Tibetans, they believe in Tibetan independence. We should stand for Tibetan independence. So there has been some kind of a discussion going on. But I think that it's, as I mentioned earlier, that the Tibetan issue is not just one person issue. It's an issue of one nation. So I personally believe that change is coming, but maybe not visible enough. You know, but then I believe that one day, if we try to maintain the unique culture and traditions in exile, and if we have more patience and if we remain steadfast in our own ambitions, I think we will achieve our goal one day.
And I hope to speak to you again when that day arrives.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for taking the time, Sonam. I've been speaking to Sonam Wangdu. He is the director of Band Expression. The film will be screened during the Freedom Film Festival this Sunday, the 7th, at 3:30 p.m. PJ Live Arts. This is Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.